February 27th, KLS producer Arnold Woods and I went to the California Medical Facility at Vacaville, where Charles Manson is currently being incarcerated. We made the trip at the invitation of Manson, who contacted the station through an intermediary. And asked why we'd chosen our station, Manson stated that he liked Berkeley, and so being the Berkeley station, he said he thought he'd offer us a chance after the interview. After being searched by guards at the main entrance to the prison, Woods and I were escorted to a point outside a heavy metal gate. There we waited for Manson to be escorted to the room on the other side of the gate where the interview was to be conducted. Manson arrived shortly and was locked inside the room. The gate was then open, and we two were led to the interview room. The door was locked behind us, and we proceeded to set up our equipment for the interview. Revisiting the intended topic of discussion, I began the question by asking Manson about his friendship with Alvin Toffler, the last surviving member of the Ma Barker gang, who had taught him how to play the guitar.
How much is that? Do you categorize yourself in the same way?
I don't categorize myself.
No. Do you think in general?
I go away on page. But I'm a hippie. I'm a hippie. And when I got out and I seen what they did with the beach generation, they ate the beach generation up and they had the hippies on the block. And they were supposed to do the hippie stuff, like they ate the beach stuff. And that's where they made the mistake with me. They took me up with the hippies and said, I was a hippie. Before the hippies, you guys were kids. They were kids to me, I was older before you were.
I understand that you are now going to be producing an album with the punk rock band Black Flag.
If you look at everything backwards, Terry Melcher came to me. I didn't go to them. They came to me to play music. Dennis Wilson came to me in the mountains. I wasn't going down there to play music. The DA would say, hey man, you were trying for a record career. I had a record career. I didn't want a record career. I just got out of one person. I didn't want to go into another. When you do music or you do anything for the public, you gotta be a player for that. You got to do down time, you got to study clocks and follow bills and tax the tips, you got all kinds of things. Well, I was three in the mountains. I didn't want, what do I want a music career for? I got a music career. I play music for music. I don't play music for attention. I don't play music for little girls. I'm not selling records. I don't play music like you guys play music. You're blocked up a little square like music. I don't play music like that.
Okay, so you aren't doing it for the public interest. It's true if you aren't doing it?
No, yes, for my own enjoyment, and I found out that in California, in order to get justice, you must buy it. They cannot give you what they call fair trials. If you have the rights that our fathers died for, I would have had my trial and I would have had my rights when I did in court, but I didn't. All I got was you guys playing me for the 60s. You had Jerry Rubin and Andy Hoffman and Tennessee Leary and Barbara Randolph and all the Holy Morocco's. They all ran the other way when it got too nasty. They would tell their children, raise up and kill your mom and dad, but when they raised up and killed their mom and dad, then all the people that said that ran. And then they blamed it over on me and said, oh, well, Charlie Manson, so his fault is that he made up the kids through all that. But none of his kids did that. Well, they said that.
At one time, did you feel any affinity for them?
Sure, I still love them. Sure. They're still like mine. They're like me. they're like sea people. It's like this now. Back in the 40s, when I'd be on the basketball court, for example, and all the kids would say, "Hey, your mom's calling you, Billy." You know, so Billy would leave, and then John would leave, and Tom would leave, and I'd be out there sitting on the basketball smoking a blunt. You know, and I was unaccepted. I was the outcast. So I ended up shooting a bicycle, and I went to reform school. And then I get out 4 years later, and I go back to the neighborhood, and I go back to the basketball court, and everybody's grown up, and there's a whole new way to kids in. So we sit and we talk, and I said, "Whatever happened to Johnny?" "Well, he died in Korea." "Well, whatever happened to Joe?" "Well, he's an automobile engineer in Detroit." "And whatever happened to Foster?" "Well, he moved to Chicago." And then I shoot a car, and I get a gun, and I go rob the place. And then I come back out of prison after 10 years, and I go back over on the basketball court. And the time for Johnny to go home, Johnny doesn't go home. And the basketball court is 10 or 15 kids, and it's all the way out the dark. And what are you supposed to do out of the dark? "Well, ain't you going to go home for dinner?" "Oh, no, my mom's kicking me out of the house. My mom's a drunk. She don't like me." In other words, the last time I got out in 57, the road that I was walking on, "Hey, there's a whole bunch of kids walking on the same road." I said, "Well, I didn't know you knew this place."
So, in other words, you had your bed laid for you early on?
No, when I heard Tennessee lyrics say "tune in and drop out," I knew where it was dropping out to because I had been on under that, on the under road, on the back side of what's happening. In other words, in the bottom.
Do you have a resentment for types of things that you did encounter when you were a child?
No, I don't waste my time with those sort of little resentments and all that bitterness and all that.
Did it have an effect on you at one time?
Just to the point to where I found out what it does to you. In other words, I'm not going to destroy myself because someone else is suicidal. Someone else got problems, that's their problems, not mine. I'll get mine where I walk.
So, in other words, you don't feel any remorse for your childhood, but you do feel a bit of that here in your outcome?
No, I'm glad. I'm glad to be raised by myself. I need to work on better. Sometimes the best parents are the worst parents. And sometimes the worst parents are the best. Because the worst parents don't teach you anything and leave you to learn for yourself.
But you do understand that from somebody else's perspective, they may have felt that they were detrimental. Do you regret anything that occurred in your lifetime?
Not to this point, no.
Okay, well, let me get back to your music. As I mentioned earlier, you are cutting an album with the group.
No. I got a little tape recorder, like this little Mickey Mouse thing here. And in fact, it's not as good as that. And I play a little music, and I sing a little music. And what happened was I gave a couple tapes that I had made to a friend of mine about 4 years ago. And he said he wanted to do something with them. Well, I told him, "Go ahead and do whatever you do." So he got in touch with some kind of lawyer somewhere doing something. And then they got the thing going, and now they're talking about they're coming out with an album.
Oh, this is the magazine article?
Yeah, but it's not an album done in the studio. It's a Mickey Mouse little trip for... But knowing that the way the news media has dealt with me, they'll take it and make it into as the best thing that I could do. But in fact, it's not really a reflection of any music that I play. It's a reflection of me passing my time and practicing. I guess you call it practicing.
You mentioned that in 1967 you did break up a relationship with both Terry Melcher and Dennis Wilson of the Beach Boys. Now, Terry Melcher was the person who had owned the home that Sharon Tate was murdered in earlier, and obviously there were some connections made between to previous ownership of the home and the eventual death of Sharon Tate and J.C. Green and Abigail Folger and Wojtek Tchaikovsky. Was there any connection between those events?
That's my neighborhood. I run that neighborhood. I run that neighborhood. I live on the beach. I live in Venice, Santa Monica, in the mountains. And I went to that house 4 or 5 times with a friend of mine that named Dean Morehouse. He's a religious type fellow, deacon in the Methodist Church. And I've been to the house of parties. And Watson, Chet Watson, knew the house because he was on the edge of what I was doing. He was watching the way I was doing what I was doing, putting together what I was putting together. So he picked the house. He just went to the house because he knew the house. But it didn't direct him, have anything to do with me.
So it's just coincidence that it happened to be pretty cool by general.
Yeah, just total coincidence.
Tell me about the relationship with Mr. Meltzer and how you happened to start.
I like Terry. Terry's a nice, gentle person. He's a peaceful person. He doesn't lie. He's treating me right. He's I would consider him a friend, but I think it, all of this madness scared him. I think it scared him to thinking that I'm somebody that I'm not. You know, a lot of people think that. Manson is some great monster. The only monster Manson is, it's what the media created and the district attorney created. Do you guys realize what's going to happen to this country because of that case? When you can go to college, son, and learn to be a lawyer, and then you can go to the district attorney's position and do anything you want, that makes you the leader of the country. Put anybody on trial and say anything you want to say, tell any lie you want to lie. Why spend billions of dollars for a school study criminology when all they do is set up on the witness and lie? You just lie and then you don't need the school, you know. And the whole thing was a big scam. It was a big act for the world, man, a big play that they put the children on trial for trying to stop the war. And then all the people like Joan Baez and what's the other chick's name now? Jane Fonda and all those people, they're screaming in their heart for the kids to do something, and then when the kids do it, then they say the kids are all fucked up, you know. And the only ones that bring change since time began is the young people. The young people are the ones that have to suffer the sufferings to change the system. But we're still working within the system. We're still improving the system and working within the system.
So are you saying that the murders of Sharon Tate and the lobbyists was a political act?
My goodness, man. Did you see Jerry Rubin stand up in a TV camera with a M16 and say, raise up children, kill your moms and dads? You didn't see that? You don't remember that? When you didn't put him on trial, you got Charlie Manson. You put Charlie Manson on trial. Did you hear A.B. Hoffman go through all the colleges and give all the speeches to all the young minds about how to use cocaine, how to deal with your dope, and how to play in that underworld? And then at the same time, he never spent 3 days in jail. He owns the judge. He buys himself judges. And he rides on the top of your children. Then he'll go back in there and play like he's hiding. Let me explain something to you. To hide from the FBI in the United States of America is almost an impossibility. Look, Willie Sutton, one of the slickest crooks in the world, couldn't do it. You got Patty Hearst, and you got her acting like she's on the run from the law. She's never on the run from the law. She's in the FBI office all the time. You know, and then you got Herbie Hoffman that acts like, oh, well, I'm with you kids. All right, you kids, you go through this, and then the kids run and do it, and then who gets the blame? You know, the kids get the blame. And then the kids that go down, let me take you to Strawberry Deal where nothing is real but the medication in the nut ward. And then they cut their wrist and write, I love you, God, all over the walls and hang themselves on the ventilator. You know.
Yeah, you can question just the use of drugs and drinking. Is that an established value of yours that you just don't like drinking and drugs? Or was this at any time?
I'm so glad. And I've lived around drugs all my life. And I live around booze all my life. I'm not against anything. I'm against the misuse. You can misuse anything, man. You know, you can say that the guy's hooked on marijuana. And to some people, that's the reality, you know. And then they say one drug leads to another. And other people, that's the reality. But the younger people don't see how those thoughts became a reality. Why are we fighting drugs? Why do we spend millions and millions of dollars fighting drugs when you develop your drugs, going to be a problem. Let me tell you anything. You know, the whole thing is silly. It's not the drugs that are bad, and it's not the people that are bad. It's all the myths that you've got created around the misunderstanding of the drugs. There's nothing wrong with drugs. If you were sick in the hospital and they come and give you a shot to take away the pain, you'll appreciate the drug. And then God put everything there for us to use. If we misuse it, that's our fault. The one way we're misusing it, we're fighting against the power that we're not going to overcome. We have to flow with the flow of those drugs.
Last September, you were severely burned by a fellow inmate who jobs in the paint center and lit him off. And because you attacked his religious beliefs and threatened him, was this just an isolated conflict between you and me?
It was in his mind. I didn't have anything in my mind. I'm not thinking about anything. He's arguing with himself. The devil he's chasing is the one that he's living with. It's inside of him. His fears and his doubts, he has to deal with. It hasn't got anything to do with me. He has got more arguments from the church house than he's got from me. I have no religious convictions in any particular direction. I'm my own religion.
There's been much publicity surrounding the fact that you were allegedly known as Jesus Christ, and that the Manson family was
the quote chosen few. Yeah. Part of your disconnection. He had to say all that to win your conviction. He had to look me up as being a leader in something. I've never led anything in my life. I had a motorcycle, sleeping bag, and a guitar. And that's it. And if anybody is on the same road I'm on, and they need a cigarette or a dollar bill or a ride or a hitchhiking, I can really help them as much as I can. I never owned that ranch. I wasn't the central figure in anything except the music. I like to play music. I play music. People come around and listen. Okay. If they give me something to eat, okay. If they don't, okay. I wasn't waving any flags. I wasn't out to do anything. I just got out of 22 years of prison, man. I just got out of prison. Can you imagine 22 years in prison? Can you imagine that?
Okay.
Well, I just got out. How could I be responsible for the children of the 60s when I was locked up in the same dungeon all during the 60s? And as far as me being Jesus, let me explain to this. Just a little before your time, there was a guy named Krishna Mundra who claimed that he was the second coming of Jesus Christ. And he had a cult in Box Canyon in Los Angeles who called it the Fountain of the World. And he was having a sex orgy one night with about 12 or 15 women. And in those days, back in the 40s, that wasn't very well accepted. So what happened was someone put dynamite up underneath his house and blew him up. They blew him up, blew his wife, all his children, blew up by that. Threw about 15 or 20 people up. He was fired. So I don't know if he did look at this. So it just so happened that, let's say 25 years later, I was standing on the same spot with 15 women. And there had been 15 women who blew up. And we laughed and we got in a circle and we said, we will blow up here once. So we won't have to blow the world up. Maybe we can make a little mark here where we won't need to blow the world up, and the next wave of kids can have their goals certain on another end of it, like the air and the water, the trees and the wildlife. See, there's a certain order in life. And the order in life to each man is doing self first. Then after you get yourself in order, then you look for your city, your town, your country, your world. So it's a guy was trying to put order into his life. He would preach on the weekends and he would hang on a cross and he would come down and he had all these followers. All right. When I got out, I was running with a guy named Hayes, called himself Cook for Hayes. And the cops had a tinted list because we were burning up road equipment that was tearing up the land. They were destroying the water and destroying the animals in the desert. So what I did was, I used to go around and burn up all these things that were tearing up the earth. And I would sneak around and do devilish little things to slow their progress down, because when you see 200,000 animals dying because somebody wants to put a fence across the desert for no particular reason except making money and selling something to the public, new roads for dusting, less cameras, all that madness that they pray in. And I tear the fences down and tear the water and put the water back into the land where the animals can have a room to play. And Jesus was running with me, and we call him Zero. And then when the cops had this list, this tentative list of who's who and what's what. They came up to me and they said, "Are you Jesus?" So they said, "Jesus." And I said, "No." And they said, "Oh, it's really something that's really." I said, "Oh." So that when they booked me in Times Hill, they thought it was real funny. They booked me also in the National Club. I had never had any thought like that in my life. I never needed to think I was anyone. You know, why must I be somebody, you know? And everybody's got a name. I have thousands of names. I don't need a name. What I need a name for? You know, I don't even name my dog. My dog is a dog, you know. And when they think he's there, you know, it really makes sense. The whole thing is, I'm from another world, man. You guys live in one kind of world. I live in a whole, altogether different world. Because you got to consider I was raised in jail, not on the street. And as far as the religion aspect, I was a student of Paharaka Yogananda in the 50s, in the 40s. You know, I went through all the retreats, and I've seen the light. I know all the things that Masamuni knows, or Riki Bhatta, or whatever you want to call them.
What is prison life like for you? At one time you had said that the prison had become home for you.
Yeah, prison is a thought. Prison is in the mind. Someone draws a line and says you're in prison. You know, I'm going to put you in prison and your number is 3359 and you're going to do blah, 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 blah. It's a struggle of will. It's a struggle of whose will is doing what. If their will has been opposed to your will, then you're considered to be in prison. But Gandhi would tell you probably that the passive force, overcomes all that. There's no prison, not to me, I'm just here, you know. The people that are in prison are locked up in their minds. They get paid to go back and forth and torment other people, and I just look at them and it doesn't affect me, not prisoners.
So do you still consider prison home in that sense?
I'm home. Anywhere I'm at, home. If I'm in Chicago, I'm still here. Anywhere I go, I'm here. If I'm in New York, I'm still here. If I'm in Florida, I'm still here. No matter where I go, I'm here. So home to me is me. You know, I'm my own home because I was raised by myself. But someone that was raised with a mother and father, they have the thoughts in their minds and the patterns in their minds of whatever home is to them.
Do you consider the idea of being released? Do you want to be released from prison?
I just want to be left alone, and I'd like to have my own will back to where I could do what I want to do. I would be completely satisfied with the rights that my father died for. So simple. It was all written down in 1776. It was laid out just as beautiful as this God had done it. You know, I never really wanted to find a God somewhere, man, and we got people landing on the moon. My goodness. You know, like one guy come up and says, "My God, quarried a 300 stone and lifted it up over these mountains and set it perfectly in place." I said, "Oh yeah, you got a big God." I said, "Now look up there at them 747. I said, "Now that's more than 3,200 tons. And it's long and set in perfect place, it's flying around the world. So, I mean, how far would you have to go before you see God? You know, you see space shuttles and you say God, you know, these guys are still down here worshiping something that, some medieval torture chamber was, doing, you know. And there are people who shoot boards and things and call them God. You know, I don't that world, I dismissed that world a long time ago. Really, I have. You know, I dismissed it. It's gone from my mind. I don't care. I mean, you know, it comes over and says, "You paid me some attention." I said, "No." "Well, you accept our God as soon as God." I said, "All right, I accept anything. You know, well, can I get on with my business? You know, and I said, "Well, we want you there too." I said, "Okay, man, you know, you're all right. I accept everything you say. You mean everything's perfect. Oh, you guys go your way. Can I leave now?" You know, and they said, "No, we want to hold you." I said, "Why?" "Because we want to take arguments with you and throw fire on you and drag you up down the hallways and blame you for everything we don't understand and everything we don't know." You know, I said, "Hey, look, I'm standing for you. How simple and childish it is. You all grew up. I didn't. You all grew up and I didn't. I watched you all grow up and I said, wow, you get old, you institute your hair falls out, you get fat, you know, you kill yourself and do all kinds of crazy little things. And I have no judgment against your world. Only what is. But you guys have always, and I think of you, you know, about our system, has always put a judgment over on me, trying to make me into something that you can relate to. But you can't relate to me. You know, what do you mean?"
So in other words, if you were released, you would be content to that fact.
No, somebody's going to pay. Somebody's going to pay, one way or another. If the courtrooms are in order, I'm going to sue. I'm going to sue for everything California wants. You know, I'll own California by the time it's broke. You know, if I sue. Now, if I can't sue, that's okay too. Then I'll start a revolution. I won't say that I've already got one going, but look around here and maybe look through yourself. It's like this. A guy comes up to me and he's called the district attorney. He's got all these guys in handcuffs and he sets you down. And he says, you're going to play this game whether you want to play it or not. So he starts giving out cards. And he goes, you hit the call leader. You know what a hit the call leader is. You're never going to hit the call leader. You've got to go find out what a hit the call leader is. And he says, all right, I got a hit the call leader card. I got 9 murder cards. I'm supposed to be responsible for making all these people do all these things. I'm supposed to have this awesome power to move people to destruction and have the power of the presidency that I can put troops in the field and have them go out and fight and die and take other people's lives for me. I'm a whole government by myself, convicted to do that. That's not me. But they convicted me for Nixon. They gave me all Nixon's problems, all Nixon's children. And then they said, I'm Nixon, they convicted me and throw me into jail. And then any one of my friends that you call my family, one of my friends, not my family, my friends, they didn't have anything. But this is the thing, has no friends. His friends is dollar bill in his life to tell him what to do. So I've got friends. And he doesn't like me because I got friends. He hates me because I got friends. Because he wants to have friends, but he doesn't know how to have friends. He plays tennis with himself. You see him in college. And they study their books and they get real good and they're proficient in what they do, you know. But they're still distorted in their makeup because they haven't accepted that there are somebody else in the world, you know, besides their own self-centered.
So you just avowed the designation of the Manson family. That's just something that was projected on what you call your family.
My will, I say open my hand, it opens. I say close my hand, it closes. My will, my hands, my fingers, me, my heart, my soul, myself, me. I have found that. It's like I told you there. I know, God knows, and the Holy Spirit knows. And once you sell them down in the marketplace, this little one's going to have to work that off. So I would suggest you not sell them a whole bunch of lies, you know, but they continue to sell that damn health and shelter trip that had nothing to do with me. Health and shelter, to me, was a nice southern invasion. And I cut the cards in the nickel. So I can move by the cards and go out playing the desert.
Let me ask you what the connection is between the Helter Skelter, which was written on the La Bianca refrigerator, and then there was your own song composition called Helter Skelter. Had you not?
You wrote it yet? No, I haven't. No, I haven't even thought of anything like that. Helter Skelter was painted on different things, man. It was a reflection of why don't we do it in the road? You know, that was just, you guys got to realize, man, I'm 50 years old. Bing Crosby was my heartthrob. Frank Sinatra was my hero. The Beatles. And over Dean Martin lives right across the river from where I live in Wheeling, West Virginia. I'm a Kentucky boy. You know, in other words, like, it took me 20-some years to get to California. Some of you guys were born and raised in California because the parents came there, but, man, I got no problem, you know. I'm not into the same things you guys are into. You know, not now, and not during the 50s. In other words, my generation was the 30s. I was raised up under depression. You guys don't even know what it's like to be hungry. You know, there's a difference, you know. And the kids that were running in the street when I got out, all of them. I really did. If they were my kids, I'd be awful proud of them. Even though they did some very terrible things, they still fought the war. They did it. You know, and they probably saved a lot of their brothers' lives. But they're still in jail and they have to take the blame for it. But they're not accepted as political prisoners, you know, because some DA had to make up something. Or somebody else told a lie and said, well, you did it for money. Oh, he did it for, there's all kinds of motives that they play with, but did you think he didn't do it? Well, I was looking for the motives before you find out whether they did it. And then another thing is, you go to court in this country, and it says, they're not interested in why you did it, they're interested in if you did it. But why you did it should be an issue also. Why are the children doing what they're doing? Why did this child reach up and put his mom and dad and murder his two little sisters and then cut his throat? Well, why did this child do something like that? Because we're not raising it, that's all. the programming is for them. TV, they're murdering people every 15 minutes. You keep chasing people down on TV.
Yeah, to the generation of the 60s, the 70s, well,
TV's raising their children. The TV's their mom and dad.
If you had had a different situation, would you have turned out differently, or do you think you...
Oh, then I wouldn't know what I know. I'm satisfied with what I know. I've got my world. You know, I've got my world. There's very few people can say that. They're always that they must hold on to somebody or something else. I don't hold on to nobody or nothing. You know, I don't need anything. All I need is to be left alone, let alone have these people quit locking me down and playing all these games with me.